You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Now, Brendan said that we were being more contemplative in this edition of the podcast, and indeed we are. Our next item features complexity theorist and FQXI member Jens Eisert, who's taking a step back from solving specific quantum problems to ask a more abstract question. Is there a way of calculating which problems are undecidable? An endeavour that could have repercussions for those building quantum computers and working in cryptography.
Eisert, who is currently based at the Free University of Berlin, likens his work to that of a detective. But the crime stories he seeks are the most complex types of computational problems, those that are actually impossible to compute because they would leave a machine calculating for infinite time. Reporter Sophie Hebden asked him how he approaches his work as a detective come physicist.
We approach the problem from different sides, and it's a very complicated, elaborate action, meaning that several steps are needed, and in a way, all do all these steps at the same time to make sure that it all comes together. Spend loads of time together at the blackboard. I have 12 meters of blackboard in our discussion room, and I spend like 5 hours a day in that room. And the rest I hide somewhere in my building, not in my office, to get my calculations done in secret places where my colleagues find me and say, oh, don't you have an office? Yes, I do have an office, but thank you. But I'm not in it because then people find me. We spend a lot of time talking about that together and try to crack the crime story. Sometimes, most crime stories you can read to the end and then you know the answer. And here it can happen that you don't know the answer. So it's a possibly open-ended crime story. It's part of the charm.
The open-ended aspect of Eisert's crime stories is exactly what interests him. These are problems that are so complex they will never be resolved because they are impossible for a computer to give a yes or no answer. So they are called undecidable. Alan Turing first identified the limits of what a machine can compute nearly 80 years ago, when he proved that it is impossible for a computer to tell you whether a program will halt on some input or continue running forever, the so-called halting problem. Eisert is searching for similarly undecidable problems, except that he is focusing on problems in the quantum world. I asked him where his interest in undecidable quantum problems began.
I mean, the starting point where really my interest in the foundations of quantum mechanics on the one hand, and the type of question one usually asks in quantum information theory, namely of the type, like what the ultimate limits are of physical processes and our classical descriptions of these processes. Yeah, so there's a famous book by John Bell on what is speakable and not, but he had something very precise in mind, namely to what extent classical descriptions of quantum mechanics or classically statistical descriptions of quantum mechanics can be done or not, and what one can speak about quantum mechanics in classical statistical terms. But, I mean, here the question popped up again, but in a different reading with a different meaning, namely, things can be unspeakable, but not because the classical language is inappropriate or so, but rather because there are problems that are undecidable in quantum mechanics. So you cannot speak about them because you cannot come up with an answer to the problem. It's not so much about quantum theory, but about our descriptions of quantum theory. It's about the very foundations of quantum mechanics and our description of reality. And here, to understand the differences between the quantum world and the classical world is, of course, very important for purely foundational reasons. In quantum information theory, it's very common to look at physical processes and operations with the eyes of computer science and ask what type of problems should be kind of easy or hard.
Computer scientists want to identify how complex a problem is to know whether it's worth giving up trying to compute it. Interestingly, computational complexity can be very different for quantum systems compared to classical systems. You might already be familiar with this difference when it comes to factoring, the process of finding the different combinations of numbers that multiply together to produce a given larger number. Factorization is considered a hard problem because it is too difficult for classical computers to do in a reasonable amount of time. So it's the basis for how we make secure transactions over the internet. But a quantum computer could do factoring easily, so people are concerned about the security risk that quantum computers could pose. ICERT has found a problem that goes the other way around, where the problem is doable in the classical world, but impossible to compute in the quantum world.
A thing everybody knows in physics is what the so-called Stern-Gerlach device is. It's a measurement apparatus. Say it's like a box, and a particle can fly in, like an electron. What the machine does is it does a measurement. It measures the state of the electron, and according to the measurement outcomes, the particle would fly out of several possible holes, like five. So I now give you such a machine, such a device, and give you also the classical description of the device. So I tell you precisely how it's built and what it measures. Now I allow you to do experiments with that, maybe in your head, like a thought experiment. You can use this device many times, but it's always the same device, meaning you have a measurement apparatus of that type. The particle flies out and flies again into an apparatus of exactly the same type. So the input of one is the output of the next. So the point of quantum measurement theory is now to say with what probability the particle will fly out through what port. Quantum mechanics is an intrinsically probabilistic theory. You can never know what happens in one shot, but it gives you the probability of it happening, and then you can verify that through many repetitions of the same experiment. So I can ask loads of questions. One of the most meaningful and presumably simplest questions is to ask, is there somewhere an empty port, meaning no matter in what state the particle flies in, it will never fly out to that port. And one would think there's also a simple answer to the question. The surprise is that is precisely a question that turns out to be undecidable. You cannot find out. If you want to check, you want to switch on your computer and want to find out whether this is the case or not, the machine will run forever and will never spit out a conclusive answer to the question.
ICERT and his colleagues then considered what would happen if the Stern-Gerlach type devices make a classical measurement instead of a quantum measurement. This changes the mathematics for describing how the devices work, honing it down to a subset of the quantum behavior and making the problem perfectly decidable.
Even classically, it's still a probabilistic problem. It's still an apparatus where the particle flies in and it flies out with some probability. But the way the probability in the next round comes about is different in quantum mechanics than in classical mechanics. In classical mechanics, it's all about probability vectors. There's no phases entering. There's no constellations that can occur. Whereas in the classical world, it's all positive numbers. And the positivity of all the probability vectors that are entering eventually makes it a decidable problem.
ICERT and his colleagues showed that the undecidable nature of the quantum case is a genuinely quantum mechanical feature.
So there's a rather deep link between questions of computational complexity, like in technical terms, and physical processes that are actually happening in nature. I'd have another example, but that's not our example, but maybe by Toby Cubitt and Michael Wolf and David Teres-Garcia, who have a very nice result, which is not yet published, which proves the undecidability of the spectral gap. What is meant by that? Think of a quantum many-body system like some metal, something that's just sitting around. These things are quantum systems with many degrees of freedom, which interact locally, meaning the positively charged ions in that crystal, say, they sit in some lattice structure, but they only see their neighbors and interact with their neighbors. That's very common in condensed matter physics, that you have many, 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 many degrees of freedom, but they interact in a local fashion, which means that the individual constituents only see their, say, their nearest neighbors in some geometric configuration. Now, these things have ground states. That's the lowest temperature state. Interestingly, even at room temperature, a lot of the properties of such materials can be described by ground state physics. It's very important to know the ground state energy of such systems and to know whether there's a so-called spectral gap, which means that above the grounded energy, there's no energy levels in the system at all, and only at a bit of a higher energy level, namely above the energy gap, are other spectral values. And then loads of them, exponentially many of them. And whether a system is gapped in the sense or not, this makes a whole lot of a difference. Deciding whether a many-body system has a gap or not is, in fact, an undecidable problem. And then you say, oh, wait a minute, that's weird. That's, in fact, one of the problems I would like to know. The answer is very important, it's very physical. But by very foundational computational reasons, I cannot find the answer.
That has implications for people who are trying to make semiconductor-type devices and that kind of thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, of course, in the context of, well, as you say, semiconductor-type devices, this is, of course, exactly the type of question that you are interested in. And now you say, this is an undecidable problem. So what does it mean? And then arguing starts, because it's not entirely obvious what that means. First of all, it means that for many practical settings, the gap question will still be decidable. It's only in for some instances that it's really an undecidable problem. But it can also mean that it's just the wrong question. And that's one of the applications of all this. Namely, you identify whether physical questions have been the right questions in the first place. So maybe that means that asking about a gap or so is not really the interesting question to ask. The gap is not a perfectly clean definition because it turns out to be, in this sense, an undecidable question. So one might need to revisit some definitions and carefully assess whether some refinement of common definitions is needed. And that's also a part of the motivations, of the portfolio of motivations for the program.
Isaac carries on looking for puzzles when he leaves the office because he loves architecture and enjoys knowing how to date buildings by their appearance.
You show me a house and I tell you in what year it was built, and then the predictive power is rather high. Like from 1300 on, you can predict the date of the building like up to a certainty of like 20 years.
Wow, that's pretty good.
And that's pretty, I mean, what I find interesting about it is first, you can do it. Second, it shows that if you live in a certain period of life, one is usually not aware of the fact to what extent the taste of the times is ubiquitous and is shaping everything around us. It just looks normal, and we're not aware to what extent we are just guided by common aesthetical mindsets that are surrounding us.
It's a bit like your analogy of your work being like investigation of a crime. You're kind of a bit of a building sleuth as well.
It is like that. I mean, you wake up in the morning and every morning believe that you can solve a little bit of a puzzle. Of course, it never works, but sometimes it does. But I mean, this getting up each day and truly believing in the expectation that at that evening something important or big could have happened and some crime story puzzle could have been solved, that brings you through the day.
Thank you to Jens Eisert for explaining his research to Sophie Hebden. On the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast, you'll find a link to an article on Eisert's research by Sophie.